Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. Chris, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Doing very well. Finally got some practices under the way, so got to see a half an hour of the team pretty
yeah.
much.
A lot of stretching and then a few individual drills. And, you know, that's pretty much all we're allowed to see these days during the fall because they close the scrimmages. But, you know, I think that's fairly common. Virginia Tech for years and years and years was probably the most open program in the country as far as the media goes. I remember when I was in college, all you had to do was email the SID and say, yo, I'm coming to practice today. And you could stay there and show up and watch the whole practice. So, you know, a lot's changed, but I think it's just keeping up with the times.
Now, when did that change? I mean, was it 5, 10 years ago?
It's slowly been changing ever since. There was never one spot where you could say, man, they really changed their media policies and stuff. But they have. It's slow. It's been a gradual change.
Yeah, I know there's a – I mean, when I went to USF, it was pretty much you could watch any practice you wanted to. They kicked you out after like an hour, hour and a half, but you got to see what you needed to. And this year, UConn actually opened up all their practices. So I just wish, you know, just wish Virginia Tech would do that. Now, earlier in the show, Joe and I were having a conversation about the Ohio State game and then the games after that. And he is very concerned about the Furman game. Yes, the Furman game. And Joe, if you just want to kind of talk about why that number two game on the schedule.
I know I will have heard this argument before, but go ahead.
Yes, I've seen too many times we have completely fallen on our faces after a big game. And it doesn't matter the opponent. We play down to them. We don't show up. And it's just horrible. And it's a rarity. It doesn't happen often, but it happens just enough that you can remember the last time it happened, and you just don't want that to happen again.
Yeah, well, is that any different than any other program?
Probably not, right. But when we fall on our face, it's hard, and it's epic.
Yeah. Listen, we're not going to fall on our face to Furman. I think they won 3 or 4 games last year. You know, I know everybody likes to point to that Boise State game, but that was one of those games where you had to travel. On and you only had 5 days rest. Tech doesn't have to travel. They have only have five days rest, but they don't have to travel. I mean, if you think about that Boise State game that was on a Monday night, Tech probably didn't get back home until 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday. So they really couldn't practice on Tuesday. So they really practiced Wednesday, Thursday with a walkthrough on Friday for James Madison that year and got upset in that game. It won't be like this year because they don't have to travel. Will they play down to Furman? Probably. Some of that isn't just playing down. Some of it is the play calling goes vanilla in games like that because you know you're going to out-talent them. You know you're going to win the game. If you've still got some stuff saved, you don't want to put it out there on film and stuff like that. I'm never concerned about how my team looks against the worst opponent they play. I'm also never really concerned about how they look when they play like a top five team because top five teams crush people. That's just what top five teams do. So if Virginia Tech ended up getting their butts kicked by Ohio State, I wouldn't worry about it because it doesn't affect the rest of the season. Now, if Virginia Tech did not end up beating Furman by 40 or 50 points, I also wouldn't worry about that either because I just they're not going to be as – it's only natural to not be as mentally focused for a game like that. I just worry about those games that are in between.
Now, what about Purdue 12 days later? Is that just – I mean, there's such a bad FBS team that you're comfortable and confident that Virginia Tech can take care of them. But, of course, it is a road game against a Big Ten school.
Yeah, and I don't know enough about Purdue, I mean, obviously, other than the fact that their coach is on the hot seat and they haven't been very good. But they were better. They did improve by 2 games this past year over the year before, I believe.
Yeah.
There's some projection and hope that they'll be better this year. I don't know. We'll see. It's been a long time since Purdue was good at football. I guess you got to go back to the Drew Brees days, when Joe Tiller was their football coach. I don't know anything about the atmosphere at their stadium. I can imagine with the type of losing they've been doing recently, it's not very good. So those games do kind of worry me. It's like when you go to Boston College and there's like 12,000 people there and it's a noon game all the time and it's so sleepy. And so it does worry me from that standpoint, but at the same time, it's something new for our players, playing a different team, playing in a different state, in a different stadium than they've ever played in before. Purdue can't beat Virginia Tech, but Virginia Tech can beat Virginia Tech in that game. It could be one of those games that's kind of ugly to watch, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll have to see how they play the 3 weeks prior to that before we can really make a judgment.
I think their starting quarterback, or the guy who was projected to be the starting quarterback, transferred out of the program, so that's sure way did. Up in the air.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, they've had some turnover there. Their coach is on the hot seat. As a result, you know, they're probably struggling with recruiting. In fact, I know they've struggled with recruiting. So, you know, that's a game I feel like that, you know, even if Virginia Tech went in there and played their C-plus, B-minus game, I still feel like that they should win it.
Now, that would be maybe a game you'd be more concerned about if it was the week after Ohio State instead of, you know, 2 weeks after, pretty much.
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes I wonder what would have happened last year if Virginia Tech had played East Carolina before Ohio State and then William & Mary after Ohio State. I mean, would they have started 3-0? It's possible. Yeah. So sometimes it comes down to how your schedule sets up as opposed to who you're actually playing. It's just who you play, when you play, where you play, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's all a factor.
And Chris, you were at the media session yesterday. Whit Babcock made an appearance, Shane Beamer, Frank Beamer, a couple of the players. Anything that stuck out in particular that anybody said, particularly Babcock or any of the players, anything that stuck out in your mind?
I think when it comes to Babcock, I think he's pretty happy that Ohio State's on the schedule this year because it means they're probably going to sell out of season tickets and those mini plans. I think that they're pretty close to selling them out right now. So I think they will sell that game out. And as a result, they're going to sell other games out. They won't sell every game out because it'll be up to the opposing team whether they sell their allotment of 4,000 tickets. But suffice to say, Virginia Tech's revenues will be higher from ticket sales this year than they were last year, and that's very important, especially as the cost of scholarships go up every year. As far as what the player said and everything like that, nothing really stood out to me. It was kind of typical player speak. Yeah. I'm already 100% convinced that Michael Brewer is going to coach one day because he has coach speak down to an art. Uh-huh. I mean, he's better at it than Frank Beamer.
Saying something.
That's saying something. I mean, he is a top-notch coach speak guy, and you know, from a guy who I'm okay with that. It's like he's a good interview, but he doesn't say anything, and that's what you want, really, from that perspective. You know, doesn't really do you any good if you're interviewing him, but he does give you enough quotes that you know, you can, if you're a beat writer, you can you have some material. But I'm firmly convinced that guy is going to be a coach one day just because of the way he handles himself.
You mentioned season ticket sales and ticket sales overall. In the next, like, 4 to 5 years, just looking at the home schedule, do you see that being a problem as far as ticket sales are concerned?
It'll be a problem next year. There's no Ohio State on the schedule next year. There's nobody like that, even close to Ohio State on the home schedule this year. So I think ticket sales will probably drop next year. Depending on how the Hokies do this year, we'll see. But what will help next year is Virginia Tech will get that guarantee from the Battle of Bristol. They'll be making anywhere from $3.5 million to $4.3 million off that game. So even if they don't quite sell as many tickets next year, they will more than make up for that by playing in the Battle at Bristol. When you look at some of our future schedules, I think Notre Dame's coming in 2018. Or something like that. They shouldn't have any trouble selling out the stadium then. Penn State's in there somewhere, I think, through 2020. Shouldn't have any trouble selling out season tickets that year. You know, ideally, you'd like to have a name opponent on your home schedule every year so that could help with your season ticket sales. I think that's critical going forward. The better HD televisions get, the more likely people are to stay home. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is these days. So I think you'd ideally, you would have one of those big name opponents on your schedule every year, but that's hard to do because guess what? Everybody else realizes that too. Everybody else is trying to fill their stadium up, so that's not easy.
How much tweaking do you think they'll be able to do with those future schedules?
I mean, at all?
You know,
they've got some flexibility there because they've tweaked their schedule before. Thanks to East Carolina. East Carolina's always been very accommodating when it comes to, can we push this game back to that year and things like that. And I think that's how Virginia Tech was able to work in the 2013 Alabama game. I think they pushed one of the East Carolina games back, or maybe not. Maybe it was something else. I know they had some kind of game at one point that East Carolina was able to switch it around. I'm not sure. But so I think there's some flexibility there. If they want to tweak it to a certain extent. But, you know, once you start getting Notre Dame's and Penn State's and Michigan's coming in here, it doesn't need tweaking all that much. I would say the only thing that needs the main thing that needs tweaking, I think, is the conference schedule. And this isn't Virginia Tech's fault. I hate this era we're in of big conferences. I mean, it doesn't even feel like Virginia Tech, Clemson, Florida State. It doesn't even feel like we're in the same conference as them. Louisville, we don't play Louisville at home until at least 2025.
Which I'm upset about.
Yeah, right.
Because I want to go to Louisville and go to my hometown.
Yeah,
and see
exactly.
Play.
Well, I think we play at Louisville one of those years, maybe in 2020, something like that. But they don't play here.
But that'd be a great game.
It'd be terrific. But because you only play 8 conference games and you have 14 teams in the conference, then those games are going to be few and far between. I wish they would take it up to a 10-game conference schedule. That way you can play one cream puff out of conference, maybe play one Ohio State or Penn State every year, and then 10 conference games. That's hard to do because the conferences aren't balanced and things like that. But I just to get Florida State and Clemson on the schedule more, it would make the TV contract more valuable, I think, to ESPN. You could potentially renegotiate. If you want to start an ACC network, I think it makes it more valuable. Honestly, it would end a lot of talk about scheduling, about, strength of schedule and can we sell out season tickets? Well, if we got Florida State on the schedule and Clemson more often, then you would sell more tickets. But that's out of our control right now.
I would love that schedule. You have, you play an ODU and ECU, and then you've got the 10-game conference schedule.
Sure.
We're good to go.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
You talk about the schedule and the idea of East Carolina a little bit. As someone who's never been down there, but seen it on TV, that is a freaky place to play on a night game and all of that. So what should Tech have to look forward to when they play them this year?
Well, I've never been down there either, actually. I think I might be going this year as a fan just to go see. It's whenever East Carolina gets a North Carolina State or Virginia Tech in their stadium, it automatically becomes the biggest game of the year. Because East Carolina, honestly, is the best football program consistently over the last 20 years in the state of North Carolina. But yet, whenever there's conference expansion, they get left out. They're not in the ACC. They're little brother, except they can beat up big brother all the time. And that really kind of annoys the bigger schools in North Carolina. So it's always a big game when they can get those North Carolina schools in there, or of a team like Virginia Tech. So it would be a pretty good atmosphere. What a lot of fans don't realize, a lot of the newer fans at least, that Virginia Tech and East Carolina used to be the exact same school. Mm-hmm. They were exact same fan base. The stadium sizes were very similar. They would play in a lot of years, and they basically split the series with each other. The talent level was similar. Then Virginia Tech got into the Big East, and East Carolina did not. And Virginia Tech took off, and East Carolina, kind of stayed at that same level. But the backgrounds of these schools and the fan bases are very, very similar. And I know a lot of our fans don't like playing East Carolina, but they're better than half the teams in the ACC. I think it helps Virginia Tech get prepared for the ACC schedule more if you play East Carolina.
Yeah, and Ruffin McNeil, who knows how much longer he's going to be there? He could have another better job coming up.
I think he's an East Carolina grad, right? I think he's very happy where he's at. I think he's one of those types. I think he feels like this is probably my best fit. So I need to go ahead and stay here where my bread is buttered, so to speak.
We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. More with him coming up next. You're listening to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. And Chris, today you did a tight end preview, and everybody talks about Bucky Hodges, but he's really more of a wide receiver at the end of the day. But it seems like there's not a ton of talk regarding Ryan Mallick. Like, he could have a really good year.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, when Scott Loeffler had zero confidence in Virginia Tech's wide receivers at all, he basically designed the passing game around Ryan Mallick. And he expected Ryan Mallick to catch 50 or 60 passes that year. Instead, Ryan Mallick, 2 weeks before the Alabama game, hurt his shoulder, had to have surgery, and Scott Loeffler had to scrap the playbook 2 weeks before the season started and install completely new things. And that was unfortunate. And then last year, Ryan Mallick got off to a hot start, 9 catches the first 2 games, but then he got hurt again and was, although he played in the rest of the games, he was never 100%. Tech fans have never really gotten to see him play at 100%. I think he was probably 100% for the bowl, and I actually put a bunch of highlights of his blocking in the article today. And he's a very good run blocker, And in fact, Virginia Tech kept him into pass block quite a bit during that Military Bowl because they trust his blocking so much. Now, the one thing the Hokies have been missing on offense the last 3 years is people who can block, regardless of position. I mean, they haven't been able to block at wide receiver, except for DJ Coles, really, a couple years ago. They hadn't been able to block at tight end, except for when Ryan Mallick's healthy. And they certainly haven't been able to block on the offensive line on a consistent basis. Ryan Mallick, if he can stay healthy this year, he can be a big boon to their running game just because of his ability to set the edge.
Do you see Hodges ever becoming a decent blocker at all?
I don't think he's a bad blocker at this point. I think he could be better, and as he gets older and maybe a little bit meaner, he'll be better. Most of the time he was a wide receiver last year. I don't know what percentage I would put on that. They had some plays in the bowl game when they did a double tight end set out of the pistol formation where he had his hand to the ground, and he did a pretty decent job blocking there. But then again, you know, it was Cincinnati. Everybody did a good job blocking Cincinnati last year as far as Virginia Tech's offense goes, so take that with a grain of salt. We'll see about Bucky. Yeah. That's one of the things I'm going to be watching for this year, to see if they expand his role any, to see if they put his hand in the ground more this year. Because, you know, if you can do that with a guy, you'll never know where he's going to line up. This past year, you pretty much knew. You didn't know on what side of the line of scrimmage, you didn't know on which side of the formation, or you didn't know which side, whether he'd be a slot or outside receiver. But for the most part, you knew Bucky Hodges, when he was in the game, he was going to be a wide receiver. But if he can develop his regular tight end skills, then, you know, he can really diversify himself going down the line.
Do you see, as far as what he needs to improve on blocking, obviously, but route running and breaking tackles, yeah, are those a couple other things?
Just the little things as far as being a tight end go and a receiver, just the sharpness of your routes, getting in out of your breaks at the right angles and things like that. And he's done a good job for a guy who never played receiver until he got to college. You know, he's got a little ways to go, and he's got to play like he's 6'7", 245, and break more tackles and run over more defensive backs and things like that. And when he starts doing that, He'll make that jump from good player to great player.
What do you think about Calvin Klein and Xavier Burke? You think they get on the field at all this season?
Yeah, Calvin Klein definitely will. I mean, he started for Virginia Tech 2 years ago just about every game. Pretty amazing story with Calvin Klein. He was a guy who played wide receiver in high school for 1 year, and that was the only football experience he ever had, and then ended up starting at tight end as a true freshman for Virginia Tech. Had never even played with his hand in the ground before. So, pretty impressive kid. He's also in the Corps of Cadets at Virginia Tech. I couldn't even imagine balancing Corps of Cadets with football with a full class load, but somehow he manages to do it, and he'll be on the field. He's a versatile tight end. You can line him up outside or on the line. With Virginia Tech's lack of depth at wide receiver this year, the more versatile tight ends they have on their roster, the better. So fortunately, you know, if they stay healthy, then their wide receiver core could really compensate for their lack of wide receivers.
Going towards those wide receivers for a minute, do we think that Isaiah Ford and the rest of them are actually going to be able to do a much better job blocking this year with Burden as
yeah.
their coach?
You know, I would think so. I think Burden's focus on it will help. The big thing is, you know, I saw Isaiah Ford on Friday, and he's put on 20 pounds of muscle from last season.
Wow.
You know, he told us on Friday that he played at 170 last year, and he's up to 191 now or something like that. And he's listed at 187 on the roster. He told us that day he had weighed in at 191. So yeah, I mean, the best thing about freshmen are they won't be freshmen anymore after a year, right? Yeah, you don't want to play a whole lot of freshmen. And unfortunately, Virginia Tech had to play a whole lot of freshmen last year. And a guy like Isaiah Ford just wasn't ready to play 800 snaps or 900 snaps or whatever it was in a season. It's just too many for him. He will be a better blocker this year just for the fact that he's a year older, packed on a lot more muscle mass, and obviously there seems to be more focus on it this year. Receiving is obviously not his problem, so I think you can afford to put a little extra focus on blocking, and that's what they did in the offseason.
Are we getting any closer to knowing who the third wide receiver is going to be?
Well, technically, it's Bucky Hodges, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you look at those backup receivers technically on the depth chart. You've got Kevin Asante, who was a redshirt senior, who's caught all of two passes in his career. The other side, you got Demetri Knowles, who was fairly productive a couple of years ago, though inconsistent. Last year, lost his confidence, got benched, caught three passes the entire season. So those are your backups.
Yeah.
And so there's not a lot of confidence there. I bet we don't know until Ohio State. You know, there's not even a depth chart on Hokiesports.com. They haven't had a depth chart there since the spring. So we're not going to know until the season starts. That's just the way it is. And I don't blame them, honestly. Why would you let Ohio State know anything about your team at all? Mm-hmm. So I understand that. I mean, after they play Ohio State, everything will be out on film, or most things will be out on film at that point. You don't have anything to hide, really. But right now, they're playing this very close to the vest, and I can't say I blame them.
Now, speaking of wide receivers, they've got Greg Stroman not only working on defense but on offense as well. I mean, what do you make of that? You think it's just something they're trying out and it might not materialize? Or
they're just looking for another big playmaker on offense, or a big playmaker on offense, a guy who can break off a 50-yard touchdown. If Greg Stroman, right now he's the number one at nickel, mm-hmm. I believe. And if they expect him to play a major role on defense, there's no way he's going to be able to play a major role on offense. Not in an offense that has a fairly complicated passing tree. I mean, pro-style passing tree. I mean, he would have to learn how to read defenses. He would have to learn alignments. He would have to learn how to run routes. And that's just too much to ask. They will give him a package of plays. I mean, that's going to involve handing him the ball, throwing him the ball on flares, and running him deep. But they're not going to give him any plays where he has to read the defense and say, okay, that cornerback and that safety are aligned here, so I should run this route and things like that. That's overloading him, especially if you want him to focus on defense. I think if you want to make a guy a full-time wide receiver, he has to be a full-time wide receiver, and he can't play any other positions. That's at least as far as this offense goes. That's my opinion.
Well, speaking of offense, for this season, do you see offensive coordinator Scott Leffler implementing anything new, trying out anything different than he's done the past couple of years, or it's a wait-and-see approach?
I think it's kind of a wait-and-see approach. I think probably the offense we saw against Ohio State last year was probably the closest we've gotten to see a real Scott Leffler offense, because other than that game, he's either had guys who shouldn't have been playing football at this mm-hmm. level, like some of the guys in 2013, or all his teams were injured, like after the Ohio State game last year, injured and a bunch of freshmen. So I think the Ohio State game is the most like a Scott Leffler offense, but we'll see. We'll see if he adds anything this year. I think the offense itself is fine as far as the scheme, the system, mm-hmm. things like that. I don't have an issue with it. Football to me is all about X's and O's and player development. And if Virginia Tech can excel at that, then it won't matter what kind of offense they run. I mean, you got to have talented players, and you got to develop them. And it doesn't matter whether you're running the Paul Johnson offense or the Texas Tech Air Raid, you'll win football games mm-hmm. if you have talented players and you develop them.
And I guess Leffler is kind of turning down his workload a little bit. He's sleeping at home, maybe, instead of sleeping in the office.
There was always stories about him, staying up till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, the game plan. He really didn't have any choice, because his players were just awful matchups the last 2 years. I mean, he had to find anything possible. I mean, sometimes when you got a first down the past couple of years, you were like, oh my gosh, we just had to work really, really hard. It almost felt like we had to give up our left legs just to get a first down. I don't expect things to be so hard to come by this year, and I think he needs to dial it back a bit for his own personal health. I've actually seen him out jogging a lot this summer, and I've never seen that before. Mm. So it's also a sign that he probably feels more confident this year than he has the last 2 years, because he didn't have the talent level to succeed over the last couple of years, and that wasn't his fault. That was the fault of the previous staff leaving for not recruiting well enough, and I think him and his staff have recruited well for a couple of years, and things should start to get better this year.
It kind of reminds me of John Gruden's schedule, where he would set his alarm at 3:43 or something, and he would only get 3 hours of sleep. Just absolutely nuts.
And that's why he works for ESPN now. Yes. You can only do that for so long.
We were both at practice on Friday, and the big question is, how does Dwayne Lawson look? I only saw him for a little bit, 5 minutes, and I mean, just looking, he's got the build and the body.
Yeah.
He looks the part, but anything stood out to you? I mean, as far as he's concerned, or it's just he's a freshman trying to learn the ropes?
Like that scene in Major League where Harry Doyle's just about a bit outside. He tried the corner. I mean, he is wild thing right now. Dwayne Lawson, he's all over the place. He's trying to learn an offense while also learning a lot of technique that he hasn't really been taught before. And it's really tough to do both things at the same time, because if you're taking a snap, you're trying to worry about your footwork, but at the same time, you're trying to focus in on the play and your reads and things like that, so it's hard to focus on your technique. The technique probably won't come until he gets the offense down, where he can drop back and he's not thinking. He already knows where that receiver is going to be. He already knows where that defensive back is going to be based on alignment. And that's when he can really start focusing in on footwork and technique and things like that. It's not a quick process developing a quarterback. I love his future. He could be used this year in a running role. I've said that the entire time. But he's not going to come in here and be some kind of a savior like some fans expect. That's just too much to ask. I think he has a good chance to start next year with the proper development. Maybe not. Yeah. I don't know. I love his long-term ceiling either way. But it just takes – quarterbacks aren't made overnight.
Mm-hmm. And we talked a lot about Michael Brewer and Dwayne Lawson and even Brendan Motley a little bit. But Chris Durkin, do you ever see a role for him at Virginia Tech? Or is he just going to be one of those guys that – kind of gets lost in the shuffle?
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. I think when you get past this season, Brewer's gone. Durkin goes into next fall as your automatic number two besides Brendan Motley. And then if Dwayne Lawson has advanced enough to challenge for the job, then you start him off at number three or whatever, and then you have a whole competition. And if Lawson's not ready next year, you could potentially see Durkin be the number two quarterback, or maybe even number one if he progresses past Brendan Motley. So it's way too early to give up on anybody there. I think that if Dwayne Lawson develops quickly, he will be the starting quarterback in 2016, because I think his ceiling is way higher than everybody else's. But if he doesn't develop quickly, then those other guys have a chance.
We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. We'll wrap things up with him next. You're listening to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. Chris, I'd be remiss if I didn't point this out. The Beamer Way sign, you pretty much hit that nail on the head.
That was crazy. I think it was Joe who asked me if they should name a building after Frank Beamer. I said, probably not, but I think they'll probably name or should name the street next to the stadium, rename Spring Road to something after Frank. And when I saw that get announced the next day, I was like, wow, yeah. I really need to go out and buy a Mega Millions ticket, apparently.
And Beamer made the joke about putting a toll booth there or a toll road.
Beamer has a good sense. A lot of people don't realize that Beamer has a pretty good sense of humor. I thought that was pretty funny.
I was thinking, hey, if you want to pay for the cost of attendance or finance that somehow, put that toll road there. It's just a joke there. Yesterday, we had somebody call in. Throughout the name Lane Kiffin to replace Frank Beamer.
Absolute
100%.
No chance.
He also...
He's considering he's failed everywhere he's been a head coach, in my opinion.
What's he doing? He's the offensive coordinator at Alabama.
That's his role.
Great job last year he did with that team.
He can recruit. He can run an offense. He just can't run a program or a team. I mean, he needs to run his offense and let somebody else worry about the team. And I don't see in any way how that would work out.
I'd imagine it'd be kind of weird having Kiffin trying to work with Bud Foster. I just feel like that relationship wouldn't really gel that much.
Yeah, probably not. I don't think so either.
One thing I did want to mention, Braxton Pfaff. Mm-hmm. You think he's got a role as a swing?
I certainly think that's possible. I think he's got the most physical potential of any backup Virginia Tech interior lineman right now. Not ready to start or anything like that, but he's a redshirt freshman. I like him better than Austin Smith. I like him better than any other younger guards in the program. He was going to play last year as a true freshman. Hurt his shoulder, had to have surgery. It's good to see him back, number two on the depth chart at right guard. If he can stay healthy, I would anticipate that he would be the first offensive guard in the game for Virginia Tech, either him or Parker Osterloh. But I feel a lot better about Tech's line depth if he's healthy than when he's hurt.
And then were you able to get a look at Brandon Face on it all? Do you think he looked good out there?
I didn't get to see him. I watched the quarterbacks. They're saying he looked good. Also heard a rumor about him being in blue for practice yesterday, which means he was limited.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's going to take a while to come back from an injury like that. It's got to be sore after you miss so much time.
Well, that's Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. Peace.